Good day and welcome to the Business Success Network podcast. I'm Stacey Calder, founder of the Business Success Network and magazine, and we help you to grow you and grow your business. We want to get you as visible as possible online, offline, and through events such as networking, awards, and conferences. If you're sitting here and listening to this and thinking this is a great show, we are looking for guests to be part of it. We want to hear your story and we want to share your information with the public. We want you to be as visible as possible. So join us over at the Business Success Network UK on Facebook, join the community, get the support, become a cheerleader for other small businesses, and we'll see you very soon.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Business Success Network for Disabled Entrepreneurs podcast. This is the last of our mini-series. I'm Jo O'Neill, I run the Business Success Network and I'm also a marketing VA and social media manager with Brightcat Business Solutions. I'm here with my guest today, Jade Wallace. From the Rise for Disability. I will put my teeth back in. Welcome, Jade. It's great to have you here. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself and your business?
Hi, my name's Jade Wallace and I'm a disabled entrepreneur. My pronouns are her, she, and I am a white female with much longer hair than I remembered. But yeah, it's quite long hair, brown hair, and I'm wearing a checked shirt, black and grey shirt, and I'm in my grey lounge because my virtual background didn't work. So
we all love tech gremlins.
Yeah. Do you want me to tell a bit about what I do and stuff as well? Is that okay? So I have been working within the healthcare and disability sector for trying to work it out now. It's been 15 years, I think. I started off as a product consultant for a healthcare manufacturing company that supported in assistive tech and postural management. And within that, I did a lot of training within those sides of things. So to become a postural management specialist and assistive technology and product research as well. And I worked for that company for 5 years, met my now husband, who's also my business partner, and we set up a product search engine to help people and health professionals find products by their individual need rather than like a tick box exercise that a lot of people going through health and social care have to face. So it looked at things like environmental factors, different presentations, because two people with the same disability can have completely different needs, and it worked out what products would be suitable and where you could get them from. And this was a tool that was used a lot by occupational therapists. So my professional background is very much aligned with occupational therapy and physio. And about 10 years ago, I've always had joint and back pains and stuff for as long as I can remember, but my symptoms have got worse with traveling, doing assessments and stuff. So I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia about 10 years ago, and in 2020 I got diagnosed with ADHD, and most recently been diagnosed with Ehlers-Danlos, which I'm sure a lot of people can relate with the fibro diagnosis and then going on to it being Ehlers-Danlos. And I am on the autistic pathway for an autism diagnosis as well. So I also have lived experience, and I think that really supports me in my mindset with business, because I know what companies and health professionals need from services, but also on the other side of it as well. That being said, from the search engine that we developed, this went on to doing product demonstrations and larger scale events. We've been in the events industry for 9 years and have got an established brand called RISE, which stands for Resource Identify Solutions and Equipment. We have also held a national event at London Excel last year called Disability Expo. And this year, what we're trying to do is merge the two brands, because I think that integration is key with any kind of approach to services within health and social care, and also for people with lived experience. We need to learn from each other. So we're doing a merge of the two for Rise for Disability Exhibition and Conference. And we have 4 regional events planned throughout the rest of this year. So our first one is in Sunderland on the 4th of July. We then have one in Kent in Sandwich. I think that's the place it's called. At the Pfizer Discovery Centre. And we also have an event at Marshall Arena in Milton Keynes on the 22nd of October. And one in Scotland, Glasgow, on the 5th of November. So the idea of these is that the Kent and Scotland one are more smaller, regional focused, if that makes sense, like very community focused kind of event with like health professionals asking us what their learning objectives and agenda is. They present on their placement of work, and then we bring in the community kind of learning and stuff. The larger scale Sunderland and Milton Keynes will basically be a similar setup to the Disability Expo last year, but we'll also bring in the RISE element of local authorities. But we'll be doing a lot of things like campaigning. We've got conferences with key topics where we are actually looking to create campaigns and potentially policies to put in actionable change as well, because we don't want to be just an event. We're a campaign that's trying to support the community that we're part of.
That all sounds amazing. Especially going back to your search engine, because as we said, we're almost half expected what would help us. It's a new diagnosis and it's not something you know about. You're not going to know. I like the way it looks at symptoms.
So not even from that side of things, with when you're looking for new products and you're newly diagnosed, we understand how like a worrying time it is. And obviously we really want to help with people learning from community and other people. I personally find on my own journey, I've learned more from other people with the same conditions than for a health professional. If anything, they've pretty been non-existent for support. But the main thing that's come back to us, so me personally, because of my professional background as well, I do a lot of consultancy with businesses as well. So I look at inclusive branding. So one of my pet peeves that really annoys me is that the mobility and disability sector in general is very much targeted to the aging population, and that's quite apparent in their branding. And when you're 25, 35 year old person that wants to have a nice looking chair or stick or bed or whatever, they plaster, and there's no disrespect to older people, I know they need it and it's a mass market for them, but it's everywhere and it makes you just feel like, I don't think it's overly inclusive.
That would be a barrier to someone not wanting to take those aids that could help them, because they don't like the way it looks and it's like it's embarrassing. Whereas if it was something that was actually blended with them, with their personality, things like that, they'd be more likely to take it up.
And there's a massive reluctance for younger people to use scooters for this reason, where they can be a great solution as an in-between. And even elderly people feel like they don't want to accept a scooter because the way it's branded and promoted is, oh, you're past it and you can't do anything anymore. And even like my 92-year-old nan is adamant that she don't want to use a scooter because of the way that it's been branded. And in fact, it's freedom. You've got better pacing energy levels so that you can live a better life. Like, you shouldn't be pushing yourself through struggles. And it's a lot of it is a level of acceptance. And I think that with more people speaking to each other, communities like your one that you've got on Facebook and people understanding and that kind of thing, I just think that it makes it a lot more acceptable for people. Like, because I'm in this industry, I have, and I would quite willingly accept using a scooter, because at the end of the day, I will enjoy my experiences more if I'm not struggling. So
I get that. And so even like if you do it, you accept that you need help, but it's like how far will you accept it? But no, this could genuinely help you. Yeah, especially if you've got something that you've got limited energy.
We've got to use your other podcast is called Saints Do Spoons, isn't it? You've got to use your spoons wisely. So if you're out of spoons, it's no good for anyone.
No, not doing anything.
No.
Use them where they're best suited.
Definitely, I agree with that.
Absolutely.
Hey, this is Chris from the Amethyst Centre. We're on Ball Hill in Coventry, and we are a Complementary Therapy and Training Centre. We have 4 rooms available for complementary therapists of any persuasion to hire, and we also have an upstairs training room. We offer training in complementary therapies, things like Reiki, aromatherapy, reflexology, massage, that sort of thing. And also in coming up, we have training in beauty therapy, eyes, facials, lashes, spray tanning, all that sort of stuff. If you're interested in complementary therapies, then give us a call on 024 7644 0186 or hello@amethystcentre.com. Thank you very much, and we're happy to sponsor this podcast. Bye.
Welcome to Rise for Disability, the place where innovation meets inclusion, and you're invited. Health professionals, innovators, and the disability community unite. With over 8,000 delegates and over 300 stands across 4 events in the UK. From the latest tech and accessibility, sports that have no limits, and conversations that spark change, we are the place to be. In Sunderland on the 4th of July, Kent on the 10th of September, Milton Keynes on the 22nd of October, and Glasgow wraps up on the 5th of November. And it's absolutely free to attend. Grab your spot now by going to our website at risefordisability.com. And companies looking to be part of the movement, connect with us today to showcase your brand and solutions to a captivated audience. From north to south, where will we be seeing you?
Okay, so the next question is what we ask all our participants on all the Business Success Network podcasts, and we've got some really interesting answers. What does business success look like to you?
I think that the most thing for me with feeling successful in business, I'm not overly a money, like, don't get me wrong, finances is great, but I'm not money driven. It's more on a more success driven, but it's not success for like personal success, it's more of like the bigger cause. So for me, knowing that I very much like to help people and support them, so if I know that I've impacted somebody in a positive way, for me that is success in business. And trust is key as well, having open dialogue with people. Yeah, I feel that being somebody that's trusted and a go-to, I feel like that's like a personal benefit to me. Like, I have a lot of people that come to me to ask for information and advice because they know that I'll give an open, honest answer and I genuinely do care. So I think that perception for me is business success, I would say.
Yeah. It's interesting. Everybody we've asked has always said, you know, as long as the bills are paid, money's not a thing that drives them, it's always something else. And it's, a lot of the disabled community, it's serving the people they want to.
I think that what would be a successful thing for disabled entrepreneurs in general is to be taken more seriously financially and not exploited. I personally feel that the type of event that we run, that it's very hard to try and get corporate or government funding and backing because they don't see value in it. And yeah. I think that out of any of the campaigns that I really need to focus on and try and be loud and proud about this year is that we do have value. We do have, they're missing out on masses of finances. And yeah, it's, I don't want to be corporate, but you feel like you're forced into a box to actually be taken seriously, if that makes sense.
I recently read a statistic that was 25% of all small business owners are disabled. So that is a massive amount of people. And especially at the moment, rates of disability are going up. And if they ignore them, they're just going to hurt the economy and the people. And they need to start paying attention and actually helping.
And I think the reason that it is as high for entrepreneurs and small business owners is because I'm not saying this is for everyone with disability because obviously it's so vast and variable, but for me and Alan's experiences is that the societal norm of 9-to-5 in business sometimes doesn't fit around that. And I think that a lot of businesses not being open-minded, they're losing out on key skill sets and certain things. I mean, for us as an employer, we're completely flexible with our hours. We know that health is fundamentally most important to all of our staff. We, without question, don't have anything about like doctors, hospital appointments, whereas companies even within our sector, I know people that work for like people in the mobility sector and they query about them having a hospital appointment to have time off and stuff like that. And it's, yeah, and that's not really opening doors for people with disabilities that represent their products to then have them as their staff. And we know that people buy from relatability. So if they've got no representation from their staff force for the equipment they're selling, why would you buy it? And this is kind of the things that I'm trying to make from being on both sides of the fence, trying to make businesses see the value in it, that you having representation within your staff, within your design process, within your branding, is only going to benefit you. And if people in our community that are, sorry, people within our industry sector for disability aids and equipment are not doing these fundamental basics, then how do you explain any other company for doing it? Like, they have to do it and they're not. So it's very frustrating.
Because on one hand, accommodations can only go so far, but they could be doing a lot more. And because they're inflexible, and they are losing out on really good people. And many of them are sort of driven towards entrepreneurship because there is no other choice.
Yeah.
It's either that or you sit on benefits, and that's not always a choice.
No.
Especially in this political
climate. Also, I think that having to, don't get me wrong, some people obviously have to be on benefits, and that's like because they don't have the energy levels or they don't feel like they can work. But there's a lot of people, I presume, that are on benefits that have been forced down that path because they don't feel there are any other options for them. And even for like smaller businesses, and I'm sure a lot of people that are entrepreneurs will agree with this, trying to even get funding and backing is a struggle as soon as you mention what you're doing, because it's like, it's the numbers are there, it's proven, but it just seems to always be dismissed. And
there's a lot of work got into it there.
And hopefully we'll be on here a lot longer than half an hour.
We'll put the world to rights and get a copper.
Yeah. Sounds good.
All right, what are your future plans for your business?
So our future plans, so what we're looking at doing is, we've had quite a reflective year from what we've done last year. And as I said, about trying to make sure things are done in the right step. So we're expanding, but scaling back as in size of events to make it more accessible. So that's one of the things we're doing, and also to bring more collaboration. But we are also looking at other projects that support what we're doing. So we're in the process of waiting to hopefully obtain a grant that should drop in June, July, to where I was talking to you about the search engine that we started off initially doing. That kind of was too advanced for its time when we done it, and I ended up just getting OTs ringing me and asked what products were good for their clients, and I'm like, there's a whole search engine, please use it, that I've built. So 10 years ago, so since then, for a start, the NHS has upgraded their Internet Explorer versions and they can actually use Chrome, which is helpful. So they weren't 10 years ago, that wasn't the case, and half of it didn't work. So what we're looking at doing is working with local authorities and the NHS, particularly to start off with around wheelchair services and mobility products. But we're looking at finding a AI intelligent prescription service to help people not only within that sector find products, but it's to look at the financial justifications of giving people choice, because at the moment it's very much, oh, you have this or you fall in this box, we'll prescribe you this, and then they don't get used. So prime example of this is a lot of people will have a manual chair maybe, and then a power chair as a second chair that's funded, but in theory they're losing their mobility by going into the power chair all the time when they maybe still have the ability. And it's something like a power add-on could be more financially justifiable than having to have a power chair. And if you're then going into a power chair but you don't meet that requirement and you have a standard car, you then need to upgrade to a WAV. There's a 6 to 12 month wait, sometimes more, to have a WAV. So you're stuck in your manual chair and not getting the right support you need. So it's looking at these kind of pathways where actually this client's case, the most suitable needs is this, and the financial justifiable needs are this. And actually, how can this be funded? So that's what we're trying to look at doing. And there's loads of companies with different really cool products out there, and because they're not part of a standardized prescription list, they're always overlooked. And everyone has the option to go down the PWB scheme of personalized wheelchair budgets, to use to fund their equipment, and then they can also use their Motability payments for scooters or wheelchairs rather than just a car. And there's also access to work as an option as well for funding, talking about entrepreneurial side of things, that with access to work is a much larger sum of money available to people than most of us probably get. And we're looking at how that can be utilised, because even with access to work, if people are being funded £3,000 to £5,000, for example, in support, and the actual amount is in, what, 60k, 70k plus or whatever it is, like it moves constantly. I can't really keep up with it, but
60 something at the moment.
66, I think it is, from memory. But yeah, so my own experiences with access to work, it's like, oh, here's a postural chair and let's put Dragon software on your computer, which are the headsets, the only thing that I actually use, because I found it extremely frustrating. So I feel like I've wasted money, because the stuff they've given me, it doesn't suit my needs. And it's like, oh, let's just provide this to everyone with this description. So yeah, it's just trying to look at how resources can be better used within the services, sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just about to start the access to work process, and it's like really having to think, what do you use, what do you need help with, what would be beneficial?
The thing that I would really recommend with anyone, especially entrepreneurs, start with the access to work side of things. It is an investment, but get somebody that knows what they're doing rather than going through the process yourself.
I have a person to help.
Yeah, that's...
And the fact I am starting the process instead of going, oh yeah, I should do that, is because I have someone to help.
Yeah, rather than just doing an online application like what I had done and had someone call me, that, because I found quite a lot out recently. Years ago it used to be OTs that did the prescription, but now it's trained, I don't know, like navigators or something like that, and they're not even like health professionals, and they're told what to prescribe, and it's done as a telephone conversation, and and they try and take, it's obviously done in a reason, but they take like certain wordings and ways you say things with regards to, like, I got told that there was no support, funding for me for support work, and that's an absolute lie. So I need to now go through a specialist that knows how to word that properly. But even with that, if you use the wrong terminology or language, the percentage of that you can get is extremely affected. And there's people that I know that definitely need 100% support in their work, and they're saying, oh, they'll fund 20% of it. And like, I said, what do they do the other time? I've got a friend that's completely reliant on people to support him in his job. Like, how's he supposed to do his work without paying? Like, for example, went to an event last week and they got a speaker's fee, but if they then had to pay a carer to stay over with them, travel them, all the expenses, that would be like three times the amount they're getting paid for a speaker's fee. So it makes people think, what's the point of me doing it?
I can completely understand that. And same with things like PIP. They're made to trip you up. It's like you have to have that correct wording. I've also got that to do as well, so I'm not looking forward to that one.
Yeah, I need to start looking down that as well, to be fair. I've started off with access to work and stuff, but I am going to look more that side. But then I think everyone's horror stories really puts me off and gives me anxiety, so I'm like, I don't want to do it.
I'm starting with access to work because I've been waiting for a diagnosis for 16 months now to actually see a specialist. And he's like, no, I should wait till I've got my diagnosis, but I'm waiting so long, it's like, I think I need to put it in.
With access to work, you don't have to have a diagnosis. And I think that a lot of people that utilise it work within the healthcare sector. Like, it's crazy how many times I speak to people that are like health professionals, that, oh yeah, I have access to work funding. And I'm like, a lot of people with disabilities don't even know about it. They need to like go down that route.
I hadn't heard about it till about a year ago, with people asking, you know, like, could I pay you through access to work? So, yeah, absolutely. What's that? But yeah, and obviously once I started the community, we started a dialogue about it. And it's like the amount of things that I would have never have thought of otherwise. Amazing.
It's good. Things like, for me personally, what was funded through access to work, coping strategies I got given. And you don't have to use that with their appointed person that's coping strategies. So I find personally, on from my neurodiverse side of things, the more than meds or anything, like I do to sometimes take meds and stuff, but the most personal support and journey that I've had is having a coach that also has ADHD or that is neurodiverse.
Yeah.
And talking through processes and stuff like that, that for me, from a symptom management side of things, has been the most helpful. And yeah, I think that's the only thing out of the funding for Access to Work, the coping strategies training, because for them, they say, oh, go on a coping strategies course. It costs £360 for half a day. Well, my coach is £50 to £60 an hour, so I can get a lot more sessions with her out of it as long as she invoices it in that way. And that's fine. They tell you that to do it that way. So as long as they're going through the same kind of process. But for me, I really wanted to have some kind of project planning, not project planning, sorry, like time management software. And they gave me something called MindView, which was just like a glorified spider diagram, like to put stuff down. It's just like, and the lady that was training me, I was asking her things beyond her knowledge, and then she was like reading them to research it. And I was like, this is not working. I'm just really not going to use this. So, yeah, it wasn't great, but I suppose I've learned from that. And I just need to obviously take a different approach forward to get somebody to do it for me properly so that I get what I need.
It's all a learning curve.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Our final question is, if you could give one top tip in life or business, what would it be?
I think it kind of goes on from what I was saying before, is to make sure it's quite easy when you are in, if you, especially if your company, I'm presuming just relating it to myself, obviously, we do stuff for the community. And I presume there's a lot of people with disabilities that has that relatability, and they go into that kind of industry sector, that because we're so passionate about it and wanting to make change and do stuff, that you have to reflect and look after yourself as well, and burnout can become quite easy. So I think that to be as helpful as you can to others, you have to make sure that you put the right processes in yourself to be supported, like Access to Work, and find out obviously what support networks and routes are out there to help you. And again, with what you have set up with Facebook, with your group with entrepreneurs and stuff, like tips of and feedback, like, yeah, that's really valuable to join networks and communities.
Yeah, find your people, they'll support you.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Okay, so is there anything you'd like to promote today?
Predominantly just our events. We obviously, to make them work and to deliver what we can, we need obviously support from the community as best as we can, and we're stronger in numbers, as I say. So making sure that if there is an event that's accessible for you to get to, the venues are all accessible. Obviously we have accessibility in the design and the planning as well. I think that the most prevalent thing to get across is that, again, we're not a media company. This is personal admirations and what we want to do sort of thing, and support. So yeah, I think that if anyone's interested in, I've got ideas for content that they think that needs to be raised. We obviously have speaking opportunities as well for panelists, companies. If you're obviously got a company and you want to get in front of an audience of local authority health professionals and the disabled community as well, speak to us about exhibiting. We're extremely low cost in comparison to your other larger events that I can't mention on screen. So most people know who they are. Yeah, so we just obviously want to support where we can.
Fabulous. And I'm assuming the links will be in the show notes when they're created, so you can go find those events. Jade, thank you very much for joining me. And you can also join us in the Facebook group if you go to Facebook and search for Business Success Network for Disabled Entrepreneurs. You will find us. Please come join us. And if you want to know more about the Business Success Network, go to businesssuccessmagazine.co.uk. And you can find all the information there. So thank you once again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And I hope everybody's having a great day. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
So you've been listening to the Business Success Network podcast. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. Please do go and check out all the other episodes that we offer. We've got a great range of guests that have gone before us and that are coming up. And if you want to get involved in the Business Success Network, you can find us at www.businesssuccessnetwork.co.uk. There's loads of ways you can get involved, whether that's from contributing to our business magazine, or whether that's getting involved in the podcast. We are here to showcase your expertise and help you to grow you and grow your business.